Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Windy weekend. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Yeah, on this first weekend of spring, it's going to feel more like winter. A high wind watch takes effect tomorrow. Downwind of the Great Lakes. Winds could gust to 60 miles per hour at times. As the day wears on Saturday, those gusts will get gustier. Some of us could even see an icy mix to start the weekend. A drone attack by Iran has killed an American in Syria.
A U.S. contractor was killed and five U.S. service members and one other U.S. contractor were wounded when a suspected Iranian drone struck a facility on a coalition base in northeast Syria.
Correspondent Jennifer Kuiper says in response to the drone strike, the U.S. military launched precision-guided missiles at facilities in Syria that are used by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard.
I think it is the right response for the U.S. to counterattack. I don't think this necessarily means that Iran has taken some new tactic against the U.S.
Fred Flights at the Center for American Security.
These attacks are being directed by Syria. Syria is being supported by Iran. But, you know, Syria doesn't like the fact that we have a presence in their country. They're using their militias to harass our troops.
Flights says the reason we have troops in Syria, about 900 right now, is to prevent an ISIS comeback. Correspondent Richard Engel.
We don't hear about American troops in Syria very much, but they have been there for the last several years, elite American special forces on this counter-ISIS mission, and they often come into contact with these Iranian-backed militias. The real question is, why did Iran now choose to carry out this attack?
Iran's been closely allied with the Syrian regime during its long and bloody 12-year-old civil war. North Korea claiming to have launched an underwater nuclear device which is capable of creating a radioactive tsunami. Here's reporter Elizabeth Palmer.
In a still photograph, North Korea's dictator Kim Jong-un is sitting in front of what the official news service says was a new underwater drone. Other photos purport to show it at sea, where North Korea claimed it had cruised for 59 hours before detonating.
The U.S. and Canada agreeing to turn away asylum seekers who cross the border illegally. President Biden and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau will announce that deal today in Ottawa. Illegal border crossings between the two countries have increased tenfold in recent years. The U.S. House votes today on a parent's bill of rights.
Parental rights do not stop at the classroom door. We do not co-parent with the government.
The bill gives moms and dads the right to know what their children are learning at school. Democrats argue it will lead to censored learning.
This legislation is nothing more than an attempt to nationalize our education system and mandate a one-size-fits-all approach across the country, assuming that the size that fits is a right-wing straitjacket.
Republicans want to know why Democrats are so adverse to moms and dads being involved with their children's education.
Could it be that if parents actually got to see what their sons and daughters are being taught, that maybe the far-left agenda of critical race theory, gender confusion, and environmental alarmism might be in danger of elimination?
The Parents' Bill of Rights calls for transparency in education by granting moms and dads access to curriculum taught at school. Talk of a total TikTok ban heating up on Capitol Hill after testimony yesterday by the TikTok CEO. Here's the commissioner of the FCC, Brendan Carr.
The most important thing that the TikTok CEO had to do yesterday was build some level of trust and credibility with Congress. And in that effort, I think he completely failed. Really, the trust is just bottoming out for TikTok.
Carr says TikTok is a threat to national security because China is using it to eavesdrop on us. Utah has become the first state to crack down on social media use in teenagers. The governor has signed a law that limits the influence of TikTok, Instagram, Instagram, Facebook, and Snapchat.
Senate Bill 152 requires social media companies to verify the ages of users in Utah, and they must get parent consent for any account holders under 18. And there will be a curfew for minors. Second, House Bill 311 will make it easier to sue social media companies over harm to children.
Reporter Amber Gilbert in Salt Lake City. A Denver high school will reopen on Monday with armed officers inside it. This after a 17-year-old shot two administrators before killing himself off campus this week. The superintendent says,
"Is it the fix? We do not know. We know that going back to extremes isn't a solution, but this is the right way forward."
The school did away with armed officers a few years ago. There won't be any indictment this week in the Donald Trump hush money case, and there may not be one at all. Trump claims there's no crime here, despite DA Alvin Bragg's attempts to prosecute the former president. The former president encouraged Bragg to, quote, call it a day on his social media site. George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley.
Some Democrats have refused to support Bragg in this effort publicly, but many others say this is helping Trump, and it is.
Trump kicks off his 2024 presidential campaign tomorrow in Waco, Texas, of all places. That's where the Branch Davidians ended a 51-day standoff with the FBI and ATF 30 years ago next month by setting fire to that compound. An overtime thriller in the Sweet 16. K-State beat Michigan State at Madison Square Garden last night in Vegas. The Gonzaga Bulldogs beat UCLA on a game-winning three. The Zags' Drew Timmy said afterward,
"Somehow, someway, we dig deep and we find a way to just come together and rally and keep fighting, and I think that's the beauty of this team."
Tonight, top-seeded Alabama in action. So, too, is upset-minded Princeton. They'll take on Creighton. The Princeton Tigers haven't made it this far in the tournament since 1967. Randy Snavely will get us caught up on all the March Madness coming up in sports. Also ahead on the Noon Report, Philly pays women to get pregnant. Rough housing by wrestlers goes too far. And Fetterman still on the sidelines.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams. We've got some turbulent weather ahead this first weekend of official spring with snow, ice, and especially rain and wind in the mix. Forecast details are up in 10.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Let's check the stories making news where you live next. A New York lawmaker wants judges to have the power to jail defendants who are determined to be dangerous. State Senator Patricia Canzari Fitzpatrick.
It would take some work to get to a point where that could be evaluated objectively, but I do think in certain circumstances for a judge to be able to articulate, because of A, B, C, and D, I find there is a threat to the community's safety, and for that reason, this person needs to be remanded.
Her bill is part of ongoing negotiations over changes to the state's controversial bail reform laws. Governor Kathy Hochul supports those changes.
Rearrests are increasing for people with violent felonies, and public opinion is clearly on the side of this clarification for judges. It's just common sense. It's supported by most New Yorkers.
But the reforms are not supported by members of Hochul's own party, who control the state legislature in Albany. A former Pennsylvania police chief has been convicted of sexually assaulting a child. The former Weisport police chief, Brent Getz, being held without bail. Pennsylvania Senate Minority Leader Jay Cost has introduced a bill that would keep property owners from being taxed out of their homes. More on that from Family Life's Terry Diener.
Senator Costa said the longtime owner-occupant tax exemption program would allow first and second class cities and counties to enact ordinances protecting homeowners in developing areas who are facing increasing property taxes as a result. Costa said he's pushing for the legislation to be passed this year. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Philadelphia will pay pregnant women $1,000 a month if they live in specific neighborhoods. The cash payments designed to improve birth outcomes by reducing racial disparities in the infant mortality rate. Eligible residents must live in neighborhoods with the highest rates of low birth weight and have a household income of less than $100,000 a year. Pennsylvania's junior U.S. senator plans to return to work soon. afternoon. Family Life's Greg Gillespie.
Democrat John Fetterman is expected to return to work after being hospitalized for post-stroke depression. His staff says he's expected back on Capitol Hill, but not for at least another week. 53-year-old Fetterman checked himself into the Walter Reed Medical Center on February 15th. Experts say clinical depression is a common symptom in a third of stroke survivors. Fetterman is also receiving speech therapy at Walter Reed. Greg Gillespie, Family Life News.
All right, thank you, Greg. New York Congressman Nick Langworthy's introduced the Dairy Pricing Opportunity Act. It's designed to help farmers create milk prices that are in line with the current dairy market. Langworthy says his bill provides much-needed stability and certainty in New York's dairy industry. New York, by the way, is the fifth biggest milk producer in the country, with nearly 3,600 dairy farms. A Pennsylvania lawmaker calling for an investigation into PPL's billing practices. Some customers were charged more than 12 times what they should have been. Here's Family Life's Sarah Harnish.
The utility company blamed a technical glitch on the error and says they will issue a refund for the difference. But customers say they have absolutely no intention of paying a $2,400 bill that should have been $200. PPL says customers were billed for estimated usage, not actual usage, at the height of winter in January. Luzerne County Democrat Jim Haddock wants the House Consumer Affairs Committee to look into it. The Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission has already launched an investigation. Sarah Harnish, Family Life News.
All right, thank you, Sarah. A school bus monitor has died from her injuries after the bus she was on collided with a pickup truck in Oswego County, New York. The driver of the school bus failed to stop at a stop sign, may face additional charges. The 63-year-old victim succumbed to head injuries at the hospital. She worked for the Mexico Academy Central School District. Experts say it will be difficult to catch the person or persons who emailed a pipe bomb threat to the Hilton Central School District near Rochester. Cybersecurity expert Jonathan Weissman.
Unfortunately, if the suspects did their due diligence in terms of covering their tracks, they're not going to be caught.
The sender cited an LGBTQ-friendly book in the school library for making the threat. If caught, that person or persons could spend several years behind bars. School bullying has landed two 17-year-old wrestlers at Starpoint High School in Lockport, New York, afoul of the law. Niagara County Sheriff Michael Filicetti.
I think this went way too far. Obviously, that's why it resulted in criminal charges.
He says the wrestlers were charged with harassment for an incident that happened at a home in the town of Wheatfield.
This has been a hard experience. I think it's been a hard experience for the victim. I think it's put a lot of turmoil at Starpoint schools as a result of some people's actions.
The bullying scandal forced Starpoint to cancel the remainder of this year's wrestling season. A legislative effort's underway to make the Hershey Kiss the official state candy in Pennsylvania. Hershey Kisses were first made in Pennsylvania by the Hershey Chocolate Company way back in 1907. Thank you, Milton Hershey. And what's a wedding cost these days? Correspondent Bree Tennis has done the math and files this report.
If you're getting married this year, it's going to cost you a little bit more than it did last year. TheKnot.com says the average cost of a wedding with 100 guests in the U.S. is now $29,000. That's up a grand from last year. Wedding planning site Zola says 77% of vendors say they'll raise their rates this year, partly because of inflation, but mostly COVID. 3 years of isolation, and now everybody wants a party. And June is out. 43% of weddings this year will happen in the fall. But the most popular day for a wedding in 2023 is Saturday, September 23rd.
All right, Bree Tennis with that report. Let's go dancing next. Not the wedding kind. This is March Madness, and it's on the Family Life Noon Report.
Good afternoon, I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, the Sweet 16 games continue this evening in the men's NCAA basketball tournament. And if they are anything like last night's games, some coaches may need tranquilizers afterwards. Last night in Las Vegas, Gonzaga trailed by 13 at the half, but came out in the second half and outscored UCLA by 23 points and grabbed a 10-point lead with just over 2 minutes to play. And then the Zags fell apart. The Bruins took a 1-point lead with 12 seconds remaining. Then Gonzaga's Julian Strother threw up a shot from the California-Vegas border, and it went in. UCLA missed a half-court shot. The Zags are moving on. 79-76, your final. Kansas State and Michigan State went into overtime to decide their contest. They had a little 5'8" guard, Marquis Noel, set a tournament record, dishing out 19 assists with some dazzling passes. He also scored 20 points and had 5 steals. K-State 98, Michigan State 93. UConn blew out Arkansas 88-65. And Florida Atlantic, a 9 seed, upset number 4 Tennessee 62-55. And they will play 4 more tonight. Well, the big boys played last night as well, and both the Knicks and the Nets probably wish they hadn't. The Knicks dropped their third straight, this one 111-106 to Orlando, and the Nets lost to Cleveland 116-114. On the ice, the Rangers fell behind 1-0 in the first, even things up at 1 in the second behind an Artemi Panarin goal, and then Adam Fox won it in the third, 2-1 over Carolina. The Flyers scored late in the third and even things up at 4, and then won the shootout over the Wild. Pittsburgh lost their game 3-2 to Dallas. That is a look at sports.
All right, thank you very much, Randy. Man, still to come on the Noon Report, a windy weekend on the way. Kevin Williams in 4 minutes. A blockbuster comeback. Brian Querrey explains. And what's in the news from Albany and Harrisburg? We'll find out. The Capital Connection crew on deck, ready to roll right after this.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. Well, parents today are caught between a rock and a hard place. On one hand, allowing kids online means exposure to content that threatens their mental health and their innocence. On the other hand, removing online access threatens to socially isolate kids from their friends and their peer groups. So what are parents to do? Earlier this month, social media behemoth TikTok announced that it would soon introduce new features designed to limit access to the app for users under 18 to just 60 minutes per day, and to help parents monitor usage and to silence notifications. Unfortunately, these steps are unlikely to provide any silver bullet that parents so desperately need right now, for at least two reasons. First, the tool itself is flawed. As commentators have noted, there's nothing to stop minors from continuing to use the app once the hour limit is reached, which means it's not really a limit. Second, parental controls cannot override the ideological commitments of social media platforms. TikTok's a perfect example. Last year, the platform updated its community guidelines to prohibit quote-unquote anti-LGBTQ+ content and to promote inclusion. Today, a simple TikTok search will turn up thousands and thousands of videos of trans-identifying teen girls happily flaunting mutilated chest after having so-called top surgery. Parents should never rely on TikTok to shield kids from this content. They should get their kids off of this platform. So-called parental controls can never replace the direct and intentional parental engagement. Once social media usage became ubiquitous among teenagers and smartphone owners became a majority of the population, the popularity of social media and smartphones meant that teens were spending less time together in person. As of 2021, almost 3/4 of minors were owners of smartphones by age 12, and 84% of 13 to 17-year-olds use social media. Well, given that the majority of teens do interact online, limiting or eliminating a teen's use of social media just seems unthinkable to many parents. I see it a bit differently. As embodied creatures, we're not only shaped by the ideas and images that come into our minds, we're also shaped by our habitual practices. The current social media regimen for most students is just not attuning them to the rhythms of reality. Rather, these habits are embedding in their hearts and minds different rhythms, rhythms of an alternative world, one that does not actually exist but seems very compelling. This means that parents must not only train their children to think critically and biblically about the content they encounter online, especially when it comes to matters of gender and sexuality, they have to work to cultivate better habits of heart and mind as practical alternatives in our present technological culture. That means taking them off certain social media platforms and unplugging the phone for long periods of time, maybe for good, should not be unthinkable for parents. In Maryland recently, a group of 30 Christian families made a year-long commitment to keep their kids off smartphones and social media together. What a great solution. Instead of using tech, the families provided alternatives for social interaction and connection to avoid the isolation, regularly coming together in person for things like Scottish dances, field days, and community picnics. A year in, parents reported that their kids were more focused, more intentional, and more aware of, quote-unquote, what really nourishes and satisfies them. Look, we cannot escape digital technology completely, and we have to prepare our kids to live in that world. But we can pursue embodied alternatives to online interaction. We can help them cultivate better habits. We can foster critical thinking and discernment. In fact, as parents, we must. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint. This Breakpoint was co-authored by Jared Eckert. For more resources to live like a Christian in this cultural moment, please go to ColsonCenter.org.
Kevin Williams, weekend weather next.
Here is your family life forecast. Clouds and sunshine in New York. Clouds will be a little more stubborn in Pennsylvania. Chillier than yesterday with high temperatures, mainly 40s. Tonight will turn out cloudy. And then we'll have rain, ice, and snow arriving late tonight across parts of western New York and central and western Pennsylvania. Low temps near 30. The mix changes to rain tomorrow. Winds will be strong and gusty from the south. Temperatures pushing the 40s and low 50s for most. It'll be very windy Saturday night, Sunday. Variably cloudy Sunday with scattered rain and snow showers and breaks of sun. And high temperatures in the 40s and 50s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. It is Friday, folks, the 24th of March, and this is the Noon Report on Family Life. And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues. At the state capitals, they are Michael Gear with the Pennsylvania Family Institute and Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Gentlemen, great to have you back today. We're going to begin in New York City. Jason, of course, that case, the Trump hush money case, and all eyes on the Manhattan District Attorney. His name is Alvin Bragg. How much of a risk, Jason, is it for him to go after Trump? Do you think this weakens or strengthens the former president going into an election year next year?
Well, I think that the DA run the risk of turning President Trump into a martyr, if you will. I think it strengthens his base. The folks that have been rabidly with him will continue to be so, maybe stronger as a result of that. And I think there's a risk for DA Bragg here because he essentially is not prosecuting any other crimes, but then he's going after this kind of a misdemeanor. It just seems very inconsistent with the way his office is being run.
Yeah, one of the things we're wondering, because this was something that the Justice Department had said, we're not going there, and Bragg's predecessor said, I'm not going there. So what does Bragg have that these other two investigations didn't have on Trump?
Yeah, and the timing of it. I mean, you know, all of a sudden there was nothing, and then, the former president announces he's going to run again, and all of a sudden now there's charges.
Yeah.
And it just looks very suspicious.
Might have something to do with it. I'm not the smartest crayon in the box, but I think that might have something to do with it. Michael, gun control was a major issue in Harrisburg this week. Several bills were introduced that would rein in the reach of the Second Amendment. Want to ask you, can there be common sense gun control without infringing on the Second Amendment? It seems like it's either or right now in Harrisburg.
It's kind of how it's been playing out. Some of the bills that have been introduced, one of them is to require background checks now on purchases of ammunition. The other one is to limit the number of guns that you can purchase at a particular time and space it out and those sort of things. I don't ultimately think that they'll get traction, especially in the state Senate, and so I don't think they're going to end up on the governor's desk. In terms of, can there be common sense gun control, I guess what I'd like to see is DAs like the radical DA in Philadelphia actually prosecuting the criminals for criminal activity. That kind of thing would go a long way to reducing the number of crimes and the number, especially of murders and shootings that are taking place in cities like Philadelphia.
Boy, there's an idea. You should run for office, Michael. You get my vote. Jason, a lot of lawmakers, including some Democrats now, are saying, hey, let's hit the pause button here on Governor Hochul's fossil fuel free agenda. How realistic is it that these goals are going to be enacted? And if you would, explain to our listeners what the ramifications would be if they are.
You know, Bob, I think that this is an issue that really bears watching in our state because there are great ramifications for what the governor is seeking to do. And if we electrify, as we are talking throughout the state, and we do away with the fossil fuels before the technology is there, we are just asking to hurt not only our economy, but also really our standing among multiple other states. The out-migration is real, and it will only accelerate if this plan moves forward.
Yeah, we've talked about it on the program. This isn't science fiction, this move away from gas-powered vehicles or even natural gas stoves. But people say, oh, it's Chicken Little, sky is falling. It's not. It's what she actually wants to do here, right?
It is. I mean, you know, you see this now both from President Biden's administration and you see it from Governor Hochul's administration. The gas stove thing is real. The idea that we're going to move to electric school buses is real. The idea that we're going to do away with gasoline-fueled cars by 2035 is real. It's happening. And this is something that people just can't believe it, but it is the state of where progressives would like to take us.
Yeah, I wonder why so many are fleeing the state. Michael, the state senator from Pennsylvania, John Cain is his name. He wants to make all election days holidays. Employers would face fines if they did not accommodate voting rights on those days. Good or bad legislation, in your opinion?
I don't think it's great legislation. As you know, Senator Cain comes from a union background. He's a plumber, and the unions are famous for using union employees to go out and do electioneering on election day, and now with mail-in voting and other sorts of things. I don't think we need additional legislation to try and force more access to voting. I think what needs to happen is people to understand to take their citizenship seriously and to do the sacrificial effort necessary. Number one, become an educated voter, and number two, take the time to go and vote.
Jason, illegal border crossings have increased tenfold at the northern border. You know, so much attention is paid to that southern border, and rightly so. But this has been a story that we've been talking about as well. In the past year, a tenfold increase in northern border crossings. Why is this happening? Is there anything that can be done at the state level to try to mitigate this?
Well, two questions there. First is, why is it happening? You know, my wife and I were traveling across that border not too long ago, and we recognized how simple it seemed to be to cross the border. We don't have physical barriers that would kind of hinder that kind of activity. And now I understand there are some cyber-type measures that occur and video surveillance and other things, but it's very difficult to protect our borders the way they are. I think we have a real problem that Border Patrol has got to get a hold of. What can the state do? It does seem like it is a federal issue rather than a state issue, but we have to have a desire to want to really protect our American sovereignty and strengthen our borders before we can ever accomplish anything. Southern border, yeah, we probably need a wall. Northern border, we could use a lot more surveillance than we currently have and get serious about protecting our nation.
I know Congressman Tenney has been really big on that lately. We'll see what happens. Michael, State Senator Art Haywood renewed his call this week for a $15 an hour minimum wage. That's a far cry from where the wage is now. Is it time for a cost of living adjustment, or do you agree with the business leaders in Pennsylvania who say this would end up hurting the very people it's intended to help?
Well, I think for the most part, I mean, if you just drive around anywhere in Pennsylvania, see the signs up for employees, you know, they'll say at a convenience store, they'll say, you know, pay $15 an hour, $15.25 an hour. So the market has sort of adjusted that already. I think when the government gets involved, though, and then adds the requirement, that creates situations, for example, for teens that might be willing to take a job and certainly would want to get a job at a lower rate and allows employers to offer those. So I think when the government gets involved, it tilts the market in a bad way. And so I think the market is adjusting. I don't know that we need a law to change it.
Great point. Jason, there was a massive healthcare workers rally in Albany back on Tuesday. 15,000 medical professionals from all over the state demanding $2.5 billion in extra funding. Given the toll that COVID enacted, are these demands warranted?
Well, it was a pretty impressive rally out there filling the MVP arena. Well organized. The unions really filled that place. Is the pay worth it? Is there more there? I do think there are many people in the medical field that are underpaid. It is something we probably could be doing better. I just have a hard time seeing this as anything other than a union push for union dues. And with union enrollment dropping in our state, it seems like this is a move by healthcare unions to strengthen their hand. And that was shown by how well organized this rally was.
Yeah, it was impressive to see that many people there in Albany. Finally, we'll end with you, Michael. Planned Parenthood in Central central Pennsylvania was sounding the alarm this week, raising the red flag. Should that judge in Texas take a abortion pill off the market, still awaiting that ruling. How common, Michael, are medication abortions in Pennsylvania, and how dangerous are they? Obviously, they're dangerous for the unborn child, but how dangerous are they for the mother?
Well, statistics are showing now that the majority, over 50% of abortions now in Pennsylvania and nationally are being done with this chemical abortion, this elixir of chemicals that does kill the baby, but then also causes harm to the women as well, especially in those situations where we have ectopic pregnancies that are not being diagnosed because whether it's mail order or even just a doctor prescribing it and going to a Walgreens or to a CVS or a Rite Aid and picking up these chemicals, that puts a real risk to the mom. So we understand why Planned Parenthood would be up in arms, because it's a profit model for them. They want to promote that. We're glad that the federal judge is looking at this and hopefully will overturn the legalization of these drugs that kill babies and harm women.
All right. With that, we are out of time this week, but if you have any question about any topic heard on the program this week, or you just want to know what is New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms anyway, Jason McGuire, you have a website for folks can go and check you out. What is that, sir?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
Stay informed on all the issues. The Pennsylvania March for Life is coming up. If you want more information on that, Michael, what's your website, sir?
PAFamily.org.
All right, guys, thank you very much. Capital Connection comes your way Fridays during the Noon Report. You can also catch it online anytime at FamilyLife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We've got some turbulent weekend weather ahead. The storm system that clobbered California a couple days ago is coming east. It's going to bring us a wide array of, inclement conditions, shall we say. Let's spell things out. First of all, no issues this afternoon. We'll have intervals of clouds and sunshine in New York. Clouds will be a little more stubborn in Pennsylvania. And chillier than yesterday with high temperatures, mainly 40s. Tonight will turn out cloudy. And then we'll have rain, ice, and snow arriving late tonight across parts of western New York and central and western Pennsylvania, low temps near 30. The mix changes to rain tomorrow. Winds will be strong and gusty from the south for many. Temperatures pushing the 40s and low 50s for most, and be very windy for some. Saturday night, Sunday, variably cloudy Sunday with scattered rain and snow showers and breaks of sun and high temperatures in the 40s and 50s.
All right, Kevin, thank you kindly. Finally at noon, a blockbuster comeback. Yeah, an iconic brand from the 80s and 90s might be about to make a comeback. We get the details from Family Life's Brian Querry.
Travel back in time for a moment. It's a Friday night. You're on the way to your local Blockbuster to pick up a couple of movies. Well, if you're feeling a bit of nostalgia for this era, here's some good news. Blockbuster might be making a comeback. The rental video chain's website was quietly revived over the weekend with a message in the brand's iconic blue and yellow font saying, "Be kind while we rewind." It's the first site update in a decade, and many brand experts are speculating the Blockbuster name may be returning in some format. Blockbuster is owned by Dish Network. At one time, there were nearly 10,000 Blockbuster stores across the U.S. As of 2019, only one Blockbuster location stands in Bend, Oregon. For now, there will be much speculation as we pause until any further announcements are recorded. Brian Querry, Family Life News.
Boy, I miss those Friday night trips to the Blockbuster. Thank you very much, Brian. And that's our world for Friday, the 24th of March. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.